You're listening to the Hour of the Time, and I'm still William Cooper. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight, I have a few things that I want to impart to you, and some of it's revealing, some of it is illuminating, so to speak, and some of it will definitely help some of you. In fact, that's what we're going to talk about first, right after this. Well, ladies and gentlemen, for those of you with children or who are expecting children or maybe just had a child, this may help you. Now, if you already have birth certificates for your children, it's not going to help you. If you have a Social Security number for your child that was assigned at birth, this will help you. If you are expecting a child, if you listen carefully, you can discover how to prevent a birth certificate from being promulgated. Keep your child from becoming the property of the state, and how to prevent your child from being tacked with a Social Security number. So listen very closely. As I said, if your child already has a birth certificate, this is not going to help you. You need some other kind of advice. And maybe we'll bring that at some other time. But right now, for those of you expecting children who do not want a birth certificate for your child, I'm going to tell you exactly what to do right this moment. So listen very carefully. If you don't have time to write it all down, order the tape. Tapes are $10 for non-members, $8 for members. Make check or money order payable to Annie, A-N-N-I-E. Do not put anything else on the payee line. Send it to the Intelligence Service, Post Office Box 1420, Sholo, Arizona, 85901. And if you have the zip right, you don't have to worry about how do you spell Sholo. 85901 is the zip. Okay, listen carefully, folks. Shortly after a baby is born and the mother has had time to effect a short recovery and has been reunited with the baby for a short period of time, usually a nurse or a nurse's aide will bring a whole fistful of papers for the mother to fill out and sign. Listen to me carefully. When they bring you these papers, do not fill out or sign anything that concerns a Social Security number. They cannot force you to. You must refuse it. Just say, no, I don't want a Social Security number for my child, and I'm not going to fill that out or sign it. When they pressure you to fill out the birth certificate, simply tell them this: I have not decided upon a name for my baby. When I do, I will let you know. Of course, when you do, you don't ever let them know. The mother and father fill out a certificate of live birth. You can go to any library, look in the older books concerning birth certificates and childbirth and things like that, and you will find a sample certificate of live birth. Mainly what it does is you're simply stating that the child was born on such and such a date at such and such a place to such and such person's mother and father, and get the doctor, your doctor, to sign it. And if he doesn't sign it, simply tell him, I'm not going to pay you your bill until you do. He'll sign it. You can also get it notarized, which is a good idea. Well, never mind. Don't get it notarized. All it needs is the certificate is two or more signatures attesting that the certificate of live birth is, in fact, genuine and is a true happening. Don't get it notarized. I'm sorry I gave you some wrong information there for a minute. On that, you don't want any kind of an official seal, notary, nothing, okay? When you leave the hospital, sooner or later somebody's going to call you and try to get the information for a birth certificate. All you have to do is simply state that you're not interested, You have a certificate of live birth. A birth certificate is not necessary or required, and nobody can force you to do it. Nobody can fill one out for you, and nobody can sign your signature to it. So, folks, that's the name of that tune. The Social Security number that is given to a child at birth can be refused. In other words, it will not be even be issued unless the mother signs her signature stating that she wants that Social Security number to be issued. If one is automatically issued, or if you have already had a Social Security number assigned to your child, here's what you can do. The Social Security number policy and general procedures are outlined, of course, in the Social Security Administration manual. Now, I'm going to give you some page numbers and some references, and these are what you go to in other words, when you go down to the Social Security office to say, you issued my child a Social Security number, and I don't want my child to have a Social Security number. I object to it on religious grounds. I object to it on every kind of grounds there is. The law says that it's a voluntary program and the child is not old enough to make a decision like that. This is what you quote. Now listen very carefully and write these down. In the Social Security Administration's manual, this is a page number, 0205.100A. 0205.100A. It concerns when a parent objects to assignment of a Social Security number to a child under the Enumeration at Birth program. The policy of the Social Security Administration does not change, void, or cancel Social Security numbers. In special situations, the Social Security Administration will delete the applicant information from the Social Security number record. Now, very simply, all you have to do is object strenuously. And then go to paragraph B, same page, paragraph B. The procedure. A parent may object when a child is assigned an SSN. If a child is issued an SSN card via the Enumeration at Birth program, and the mother states she answered no to the enumeration question when providing birth information for the newborn, assume that the state inadvertently keyed yes and follow these steps. Step 1. Explain that the child will need an SSN by at least age 2. This is what they're supposed to tell you. If he or she will be listed as a dependent on an income tax return. If the parent accepts this explanation and will keep the SSN card, stop. If this is not acceptable, go to step 2. Remember, this is the person that you're going to be talking to at the office speaking now. Explain that on SSA's records, the account will remain dormant unless earnings are posted on the record. If the parent accepts this explanation and will keep the card, stop. If the parent accepts the explanation but does want the SSN card, take the card and destroy the card, but does not want the SSN card. I'm sorry. If the parent accepts the explanation but does not want the SSN card, take the card and destroy the card. According to RM00201.060. Explain that when an application is later made for an SSN card, the same number will be assigned. If the parent insists that we delete the SSN record, explain that the deletion action may take several months. In reality, it doesn't take several months. They can do it, in fact, immediately. But they want you to go home and several months later forget about it. And that's what most people will do. Then go to step 3. Document the parent's objection. Advise the parent that the case must be sent to central office for review. Explain to the parent that if we delete the applicant information from the SSN record, a subsequent Social Security number request, likely before the child is age 2, will result in a different SSN. Well, who cares? In addition, if and when the parent files for an SSN for the child in the future, he or she should enter no in item 10 on the SS-5. Forward all material pertinent to the situation, including the observation and recommendation to the Social Security Administration, blah, 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 blah. Request review of the case and action concerning the parent's request for deletion of the data from the SSN record. Send a copy of the entire file to the appropriate regional office so that they can discuss ongoing problems with the involved state. Okay, they're going to give you a lot of resistance. But if you are firm, if you follow up, ask for copies of all the forms that they fill out and follow it up. Call them every single week. If the person you're talking to can't give you an answer, ask to speak to their supervisor. Be insistent. They will revoke the Social Security number and delete all of the information in the record. But you have to do that. Now remember, what I just read to you is not what you're going to be telling to the Social Security office. It's the procedure that they follow to try and deal with you. And it shows you how they're going to try to put you off and give you different explanations and tell you this and that, tell you you got to wait for several months and all this kind of stuff. Just continue. Be insistent. I object upon religious grounds. I also object because it's a voluntary program and the child isn't old enough to make a voluntary decision. I am the parent. I want this number revoked now. Take it away. I want all the data and information deleted from the record now. Do it. And you will be successful. My children do not have Social Security numbers. And yours do not have to have them either. So that's the name of that tune. Also want to remind you all that R. Renee, the author of NASA Mooned America, will be at a meeting of the Constitutionists on the first Monday in February at 8 p.m. That's the first Monday in February at 8 p.m. That's at the JOUAM Hall or meeting room at Locust Street and River Drive in Elmwood Park, New Jersey. It's a $5 donation. He's going to have his space glove machine there, and he'll show you exactly why that so-called spacesuit with the gloves and the astronauts working their fingers and picking things up and doing very complicated work could not have been done. And once you see this demonstration, you're going to laugh so hard at NASA. It's really going to be good. If you're anywhere around and you can get there, make sure that you are there. There'll be other speakers talking about federal issues, state issues, and programs for the coming year. For information, call 201-471-7591. That's 201-471-7591. And get a chance to talk to Renee. Tell him I said, hey. Now, since the information and the page numbers and the procedures and the steps and things I gave you are what the Social Security person goes through, those are good to have because when they give you those things, you can say, oh, you're quoting from 0205.100A, blah, 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 and now you're telling me about, paragraph B, and now you're taking step one and step two and blah, blah, blah. And when they see that you know what you're talking about, they don't give you as much trouble as they normally would. Okay. The Amtrak derailment in Arizona. There are no suspects. They haven't caught anybody. Nobody knows what happened except one thing. The FBI has upset and angered everybody in the entire state. Everybody in Arizona is so angry at the FBI that the FBI is, when people see the FBI coming or they flash their credentials now, people just turn around and walk away. You see, they went down there and they sent 130 agents, 130 agents. And these agents went around lying to people and intimidating them and threatening them and grilling them as if they were convicted murderers, scared people, tried to ruin their reputation in the community. And so everybody is pretty angry. You see, most people don't know that you don't have to talk to these scumbags. Most people don't know that you don't have to take a lie detector test. And they also don't know that if you do take one, it doesn't mean anything and it is not admissible in any court of law, because a lie detector test is fallible. Fallible means you can be telling the absolute truth and it can show that you're a liar. Or you can be the biggest liar that ever lived on the face of this earth and it can show that you're telling the truth. I would venture to say that there are a lot of people in jail because they took lie detector tests when they didn't have to. Let me tell you the best advice that I can give you, ladies and gentlemen, especially today. It didn't used to be this way. It used to be that law enforcement was to protect and to serve the community. They were there to help people. Children were not afraid of law enforcement officers, and everybody was solidly behind the FBI, would never think of not helping them. And all law-abiding citizens would help any law enforcement officer anytime they could, but not today. Not today, ladies and gentlemen. If law enforcement comes to your house, don't open the door, don't invite them in, don't talk to them. Tell them to get off your property and don't return unless they have a warrant. If they ask you to take a lie detector test, turn around and ask the guy, will you take a lie detector test? If he says yes, then say, fine, go take one. Get off my property and don't come back unless you have a legal and lawful and properly executed warrant. These people are despicable. They are Gestapo. And I'm going to read you this little piece here so that you'll know what I'm talking about. There's a guy named Paul Massengale. Now, he's just a regular guy, lives down by Buckeye. He wants to be left alone. He's one of these guys that really doesn't like to be around a whole lot of people, but the FBI came out there and ruined his life, just about. He said, in fact, that they treated him like the white stuff in a chicken house. He says, and I'll quote, I'll never have faith in the justice system again in my life, end quote. You see, after that Amtrak derailment down there, and they found the letter, supposed letter, which spouted the Gestapo tactics of federal law enforcement agencies, well, you know what happened? It turns out that that letter was absolutely correct. 100% right. They are Gestapo, and they do use Gestapo tactics. And everybody down there who has had a face-to-face experience with the Federal Bureau of Investigation will tell you that, without exception. They are outraged. You see, the local populace was initially angry at the train records, but now they're angry at the FBI, and nobody talks about the train wreckers anymore, if there even were any. And everybody down there says the FBI are liars, intimidators, they harassed people, and they ruined a few people's lives. There were about 130 agents, a whole bunch of deputies. They just invaded the whole area to investigate the October 9th Amtrak derailment, where one person died and 78 people were injured. There's a $100,000 reward offered. No one is behind bars, no one is under suspicion, but a lot of people have been intimidated and scared and lied to and everything else. No one has ever identified any group of people known as the Sons of Gestapo, which was the signature typed on the letter left at the scene. But not for lack of effort. I mean, they've been doing their best to find out. And so has everybody else. I'd like to know. But I know, I knew from the beginning there wasn't any. Nobody with any brains would ever sign anything, Sons of the Gestapo. Not even a real son of the Gestapo would do something so stupid. Nope. The only people in the world I could think of would ever do anything like that is somebody like the ADL, who would want to create some type of a racial incident. The FBI agents questioned hundreds and hundreds of people. And these little farm communities down there, Arlington, Hyder, Tonopah, Palverde, they've searched homes. And they intimated people, if they didn't let them search their homes, they must be guilty and would probably be arrested. It was all a lie. They didn't have any evidence to arrest anybody on. It was intimidation, scare people, force them to let them in their home. And like the sheeple that they are, they did. And now they're paying for it. See, the whole community is suffering over this. They have literally forced about a half a dozen people to take polygraphs, which is the lie detector test. And the FBI says, well, we didn't make anybody take a lie detector test. They all volunteered. You should see the volunteer process, ladies and gentlemen. It's like in the military. Yeah. You're going to go on this patrol. Are you going to have KP and pill potatoes for the rest of your life and be on guard duty at midnight every single night, and you're going to clean out the grease trap, and you're going to clean the latrines for the rest of your Army career? Now, what do you think the guy's going to do? He's going to go on parole, right? Well, that's the way these guys get volunteers also. The FBI are disgusting, disgusting Gestapo, scum-faced, jackbooted thugs just like the ATF. There's a guy down there named Steve Conde. He said he got sick and tired of being interrogated by the FBI. And when they finally suggested a polygraph test, he's the only one. He told them, and I quote, kiss off, end quote. Another guy, Billy Marks of Arlington, was questioned repeatedly. They intimidated him until he took a polygraph test and placed him under surveillance for weeks. Obvious surveillance, not the kind where they're not trying to let you know they're following you. They wanted him to know they were following him. They wanted all the neighbors to know they were following. And the result was all the neighbors thought that he caused the train wreck. He'll be under suspicion for the rest of his life, even though he didn't do anything. Marx got disgusted, and in the great tradition of the Sons of the Gestapo, he gave him a Nazi salute every time he saw, because they were trying to make him out to be one of the Sons of the Gestapo, a non-existent organization, and on several occasions they just flat right out called him a Nazi. Massengale works for a defense contractor as a bombing range observer. Agents repeatedly called his office and told his fellow workers needled him so much he considered quitting. Finally, after weeks of intimidation, he submitted to three interviews and a polygraph. Here's what he says about it. Quote, we need to go over this again, they'd say. This don't fit. That don't fit. Well, the reason things didn't fit is 'cause I wasn't out there, he said. There's no end to their questioning. It's brain rape, end quote. A guy named Jack Callahan, an FBI spokesman in Phoenix, he says that agents have checked more than 500 tips. A lot of them from West Side residents pointing fingers at each other. And no wonder. They intimidate somebody until the person says, hey, what does it take for you to leave me alone? Well, tell us which one of your neighbors are suspicious. And so the poor guy points out one of his neighbors and says, that guy over there, he comes and goes at odd hours. Or some stupid bullshit like that. The FBI claims no one has been coerced to talk, and that's a blatant, barefaced lie. It's See, not only are they scum-faced, jackbooted thugs, but they're liars. No search warrants have been issued, yet they've searched many people's homes. And here's what they say. Here's what Callahan says, the FBI spokesman. Quote, it's their choice. I don't think anybody can cite me a case of intimidation out there. Each and every one of them voluntarily took the polygraph, end quote. Yet every single person that you talk to out there says that they were intimidated, scared, followed, threatened, called Nazis, etc. Then Callahan says, that's what the I is for an FBI. It's investigation. We have a job to do. Sometimes it may be bothersome to individuals. If somebody's not happy, that's their right, end quote. They went to Val Verde, California, to the home of John Olin, who used to live in Arizona. He has a criminal record and business feuds with the railroads, so they thought maybe he did it. They searched his home and business with no search warrant. They intimidated him into taking a polygraph test. The federal agents ruined his business and his reputation, and he will probably never recover. The FBI says they never divulged any information on anybody. But you see, the people down there know that this guy is lying again, you see, because all the residents of that area know it's hard to hide the fact that federal agents are at your house and interviewing your friends and following you around 24 hours a day, and there's an FBI car parked in front of your house all night. Especially along old Arizona 80. In fact, there's a plaque in the local saloon that says, quote, trying to keep a secret at the Desert Rose is like trying to slip the daylight past a rooster, end quote. Sort of the cultural headquarters of the valley. Folks are just folks down there. Farmers, workers, manual laborers, railroad workers. There's a lot of pickup trucks, a lot of dirt roads, a lot of tractors and cotton fields. The bartender, if you ask him, will tell you that the FBI teams came in daily at the start of the investigation, and they use a nice guy, tough guy, good guy, bad guy routine. And so the local residents told him a lot of tall tales. And that kept them spinning around for a little while. They asked the same things over and over again to see if you'll change your story. And, of course, around there, they embellish everything. To be the person who didn't cooperate. In the beginning, they all cooperated. They wanted to catch whoever did that. It's their community. They don't like that stuff happening around there. But then the animosity and the hostility began to grow as the questions persisted, and one by one, all the neighbors fell under suspicion. And to stop from being persecuted, neighbors began to point at each other. And folks, it wasn't done by any of them. You see, you can't keep something like that quiet in a small community like that, especially not with a $100,000 reward being offered. After all, people are people. And then the FBI looked on down the road and focused on a group of trailers about 3 miles away from the bar. And they began to intimidate Dave Hamby and his friend. B.A., who's a handyman. He won't give anybody his last name. He said that he and Hamby went camping in the mountains near Quail Springs Wash on the night of the derailment. They were out there to spot deer so that they could go hunting when the season opened. Well, they got drunk that night and passed out in their sleeping bags, and they didn't know anything happened until they were rousted by helicopters in the morning. Now, let me tell you something, folks. If they'd just derailed a train, they wouldn't be laying there in their sleeping bags waiting to get discovered. They said they didn't know what was going on until they got back. They notified the sheriff that they had been in the area but hadn't seen anything. And then the FBI came. They answered questions. Took them to the campsite where they'd spent the night. Then when they got back home, there were at least a dozen FBI and law officers standing in their yard. Intimidated them to no end, scared them half to death, until finally they gave in and let them search the place. And then they took them to FBI headquarters. They told them they had nothing to do with the wreck. They'd been honest. You know, they came back, called the sheriff, told him where they'd been. They had nothing to do with any anti-government group, end quote. They don't deal in politics. In fact, BA said, you just figure you can't do anything about politics anyway, so you live out here and say, let us alone. And they wouldn't even let them alone. The FBI had other plans for these guys, you see. They told BA that he was not a suspect, but yet they asked him to sign an acknowledgement of his Miranda rights and take a lie detector test. Now that's scary. Real scary. Some of the questions that he says he was asked is, had he ever hurt anyone or lied to someone he loved? Did he know anyone who owned a cowboy hat? And he asked a lot of questions about the militia. Can you believe this? They asked these guys a lot of questions about the militia. In fact, they asked them all questions about the militia. Now, these are loners, people who live out there in the desert. They don't get along with each other. How in the world are they going to form a militia? Anybody answer that question? They told people that they had a set of jumper cables that was used to bypass the railroad warning system. And listen to this intimidation. They were told that the cable was being examined for fingerprints, and they were asked to explain how their fingerprints might be among those found. Now that's enough to scare the hell out of anybody, isn't it? Well, needless to say, nobody who lives in that area ever wants to see an FBI agent ever again. And the next time anything happens down there that involves the FBI investigating, I can assure you they're not going to get any cooperation whatsoever. Not only that, but film crews invaded their yards and filmed their homes and their children and their families. And they wouldn't leave until people called the sheriff. One TV news team followed the children's bus home from school, and a radio station reported that Hamby and another man, presumably BA, were under arrest. How do you recover from something like that? Messengale is really angry, really bitter. You see, they told him that he passed the polygraph, then returned a little bit later when he was feeling good, and said he failed one question. the question was, do you have any information about the wreck or who did it? And this time, Massengale told us that they were trying to get him to inform on his neighbors. And then he found out later that they did the same thing to everybody. Same question. Hi, Chihuahua. Don't ever talk to them. Don't let them on your property. Don't ever consent to take a lie detector test. Unless you're under arrest, don't consent to go anywhere with them. And if they're trying to get you to go somewhere with them or do something, ask them point blank, am I under arrest? If they say no, say goodbye. And if they're on your property, tell them to get off your property and don't come back unless they have a legal and lawful, valid and properly executed warrant. Ladies and gentlemen, the hour of the time is brought to you by Swiss America Trading. I couldn't believe what happened yesterday and today. And I got a letter from somebody who I thought had all his marbles. Really did. In fact, I thought he was a stand-up guy. Apparently, he's got hooked up with some lady that he didn't know until just a few months ago, 2 or 3 months ago. And she, for the last year or so, has been purchasing coins from Swiss America Trading. She knew the value of the coins. She purchased the coins. She was happy with the coins. She understood the buyback policy. Not only did she buy once, but she come back 2 months later and buy again, and 2 months later and buy again, until she had invested about $10,000 in these coins to protect her assets. Then she met this fellow, whom I also knew, whom I thought was a stand-up guy. And she showed him her coins, very proud of them. And then the trouble started. First thing I got was a letter saying that she had been cheated and that if I didn't make it good immediately, then this guy was going to go out and tell the world that I was... He didn't put it in these words, but it's exactly what he meant, that I was a liar in Swiss America Trading. We're crooks. And the truth is, ladies and gentlemen, I thought this woman was all angry, you know. But I was upset. Number one, it's her boyfriend writing me. The woman never called me, ever. If she had felt that something was wrong and had called me, you know, within a few weeks or maybe a couple of months of purchasing the coins, I would have made sure that she got absolute satisfaction, perfection, everything. But here it is a year later, and his boyfriend lays his eyes on these coins and dollar signs start spinning in his head. And to make matters worse, she loses her job. Well, she had called Swiss America Trading and wanted to exercise the buyback policy, which she fully understood, knew exactly what it was. She was not upset with Swiss America Trading or with the bypass policy or anything. She did not ask this boyfriend to write me or to call me, which he did today and made the same threat again, which really, ladies and gentlemen, pissed me off. Got to tell you right now. So I told him, I said, listen, number one, she should be calling me, not you. Number two, there's not a business in this entire nation that has any product whatsoever that you can use and have in your possession for over a year and then go back and ask for a 100% refund. And that's what he wanted. And I said, besides, you're going with this girl, you're not married, and I can't, you know, we can't deal with boyfriends. Period. I can't. Swiss America can't. We can't tell the financial status of people to boyfriends and girlfriends. So I let him know what I thought about what he was doing, and then after I hang up, I called Craig Smith and talked to him. And this made me even more angry, ladies and gentlemen, because I know Craig Smith. You see, I called Craig and I said, listen, somebody's trying to pull a scam on you, Craig. I know you. He says, well, before I could even finish, he said, well, whatever it is, just tell me who it is and I'll make them happy. I don't care what it is. I said, Craig, that's why I'm angry. Because they're trying to take advantage of your good nature. They're trying to screw you. And by implication, screw me. I have no investment in Swiss America Trading. I don't make any money off of anything that they do. They don't put one penny in my pocket. They pay for the airtime of this broadcast and the satellite time to WWCR and the satellite people. I never even, the check doesn't even pass through my hands, ladies and gentlemen. But I am a stand-up guy, and so is Craig Smith. And it really makes me angry when somebody tries to rip off a good person. I told you, I stand behind anything that I do. And I'll stand behind my sponsor, Swiss America Trading. But I won't stand behind anyone trying to rip them off, ever. But it didn't matter what I said to Craig. Craig said he'd do whatever necessary to make the lady happy. Well, it turned out the lady was happy with the buyback policy. She completely understood it. And here's this jerk boyfriend butting in, causing all kinds of problems. You see, even though it's been over a year, Craig was going to do whatever this lady wanted simply because that's the way he is. But I wouldn't let him this time. I wouldn't let him. When I found out the true facts of the case, I told Steve, who's the general manager down there, to talk to her, forget about the boyfriend, and if she's happy, do what's right. And what was right was the buyback policy. And that's what was done. Now, if she'd called me, and there had been a real problem, you know, if she had really been cheated or screwed over or anything like that, I would have told Craig to give her every penny of her money back. But that's not what happened. And I'll tell you something else about this buyback policy, ladies and gentlemen, that most of you don't understand. Nobody else will give you a buyback policy. Nobody out there has one. Swiss America Trading will do it. You know what it means? It means if the market falls to zero tomorrow and you purchased $40,000 worth of coins from them, they're going to pay you back every penny according to the buyback policy that you agreed on when you purchased the coins, and they're going to lose their butt. Nobody else will do that. But Craig Smith will do it. Craig Smith is stand-up. And I'm stand-up. So if you want to deal with somebody, deal with Swiss America Trading. Not only that, but this jerk sent me a form letter from a well-known con man in the metals business stating that she paid twice as much for her coins as what they were worth and that only millionaires buy those kinds of coins. Every coin that she purchased was a regular coin. Nothing millionaire-ish about them, nothing extravagant, nothing unusual, except for two or three, I forget. I've got a whole list of what she bought right here. MS64s with special dates. But they weren't super rare. Just good coins to have in these times. So, if you want to deal with some good people who stand behind what they do, and whom I stand behind 100%, but remember this, if you're legitimate, I'll back you all the way. If you're trying to screw Swiss America Trading, I'll chop you down to your toenails, and I won't even have one pang of conscience about it. Call Swiss America Trading, 1-800-289-2646. You'll be real glad that you did, folks. You'll never regret it. 1-800-289-2646. And remember, when you buy coins, real money, you're not buying these for an investment, and I've never told you that you were. You're buying them to protect your assets against continuous inflation and a projected collapse, total collapse of the economic system. If you're buying these coins to put away for a rainy day, if you're buying these coins so that you'll have money when you get unemployed, or if you're buying these coins thinking that you're going to make a whole bunch of money on your investment, then you had better be an expert in precious metals. The only reason that my listeners should be buying these coins, ladies and gentlemen, is to protect your assets and protect you against what we all know is coming. 1-800-289-2646. Call now. You'll be glad that you did. That's right, he will get you if you're not careful. I want you to listen very carefully to this, folks. Confirms everything I've been telling you, and it's right out of the horse's mouth. And let me see, what does this come from? This comes from the New Republic, January 22nd, 1995. New Republic, January 22nd, 1995. Letter to the editor. Or excuse me. I'm sorry, I was wrong. This is from the letters to the editor of the Oklahoma Gazette. The Oklahoma Gazette. Letters to the editor, Oklahoma Gazette. And this is, well, let me just read it to you verbatim. Quote, in response to Nathan Schlink's comment stating that Masons aren't extremists in your December 14th issue, I'm afraid that young Nathan is a little confused with his idea about the history of the Freemasons, which is really sad, but it also explains why the organization's membership is slowly dropping off. I find that most Masons don't really know much about the origins and where certain rituals came from. It's true that the Masons and their auxiliary organizations do offer hospital care, the Shriners Hospital being one of the finest burn recovery centers in the world, and the charity work has been documented, but the Lodge in itself has been one of the most successful extremist groups in the history of the world. As a historian by profession, there are some areas I would like to present to the general public, and yes, I am a Freemason. In October 1307, the Knights Templar, which is still connected with the Lodge, were condemned and burned as heretics of the Church. Its headmaster, Jacques de Molay, was recognized as a role model fit enough to head the adolescent's Masonic organization, the de Molays. The Peasants' Revolt of 1381 in England was stirred up by Wat Tyler, a man whose last name all travelers will recognize. The cause of the revolt? Property that was seized unlawfully from the Templars and given to a rival group known today as the International Society of the Red Cross. The Boston Tea Party of 1773 was blamed by the British's Lord North as an act of a few New England fanatics. In fact, this extremist act was performed by members of the local lodge whose past master would later give the oath of office to George Washington as our first Masonic president. As an example of the depth of Masonry in our government's history, the cornerstones of the Capitol and the White House